Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabe Gakin, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nihiyawak and the Nakota. I'm your host, Michael Welch. On today's show...
It was the power that pushed us right through the Supreme Court when they passed that injunction onto the Unist'ot'en Nation.
Canada has invaded a sovereign nation state to impose their law.
It is up to us, to you and to me, to make sure that this march is not simply a march, but a movement that will march on Toronto.
But first, here are the headlines. From Gal Mahadevan and Lizzie Chatham at CKUT.
On Thursday, January 17th, the Ontario government, headed by Premier Doug Ford, announced that it would be slashing tuition fees paid by university and college students by 10% starting next year. However, the proposed cuts come with a series of reforms to Ontario's student loan and grant programs. Programs put in place by the previous Liberal government that allowed 1 in 4 students to go to school tuition-free, as well as the 6-month interest-free grace period on OSEP loans, will be eliminated. Speaking to CKUT's Lizzie Chatham, Fred Hahn, Ontario's president of QP, the Canadian Union of Public Employees, had this to say.
While they said that they were cutting fees represent between a 4 to 10% cut to university budget. They've removed effectively $360 million from university budgets and $80 million from colleges. So this is actually a cut. And on top of that, what they've done is make a series of changes. For example, grants that were in place for students from medium and low-income families now disappear and become student loans. The grace period that existed here to start repaying student loans, a 6-month interest-free grace period, will also disappear. What the Liberals did was enhance grants to low- and middle-income families. Those grants are disappearing and being converted into loans. So, in fact, what they're doing is increasing student debt, which is already at record high levels. Post-secondary institutions in Ontario receive the lowest amount of public funding of any universities across the entire country. Our tuition fees here for post-secondary institutions are the highest anywhere across the country. Our percentage of student debt here is the highest of anywhere across the country. But one of the most devastating pieces of this actually has to do with student union fees, because student union fees paid for by students actually supply a whole bunch of services and advocacy that students require and need and want, but they don't get from paying their tuition. And what the government's effectively doing is saying that now becomes optional.
Thanks to Montreal's CKUT 90.3 FM broadcasting on traditional Mohawk territory for that headline. Our final headline comes from Catherine Fisher of CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, on Sinaig's traditional territory, regarding a recent report on a few climate change gains in Canada.
In a year filled with bad news on the climate action front, Alberta's Pembina Institute has identified a few energy policy gains in Canada in 2018 in its recent report, 10 Wins for Canadian Energy and Climate Action. Here are a few stories the Institute believes are worth celebrating and building on. Canada committed to a national price on pollution, which comes into effect this month. BC released a clean growth plan that sets forth a vision for moving away from fossil fuels. The plan sets a course for all new homes and buildings to be low carbon in 10 years and for all new cars sold to be zero emissions by 2040. Alberta continues to expand its supply of renewable energy with the goal to power 30% of the grid with renewable energy by 2030. Canada finalized and published its coal phase-out regulations, supporting a move towards being free from coal pollution by 2030. The Pembina Institute was formed 3 decades ago as a result of a major sour gas blowout incident in Alberta. It advocates for federal and provincial policy improvements to the energy sector and releases policy briefings and reports. You can find the Pembina Institute and the 10 Wins report at pembina.org.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
Let's get lost before the sun. We don't need them.
You are listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. You just heard Dance in the Rain by Sebastian Owl from the album The Ties That Bind. Now it's time for our feature stories. On the afternoon of Monday, January 7th, RCMP in the province of British Columbia forcefully breached the Gidumtan checkpoint on unceded Wet'suwet'en territory, located an hour's drive from Houston, B.C. The checkpoint was situated at the Unistoten camp, which was established to block the paths of pipelines threatening the territory, including proposed Coastal GasLink, TransCanada's fracked gas pipeline. 14 people were arrested. The Mounties were enforcing an injunction filed by Coastal GasLink in order to secure access to a forest road serving the energy company workers. But the company, the federal government, and the Mounties have come under criticism for violating the sovereignty of Indigenous peoples outside the jurisdiction of the Canadian state. Outrage at the heavy-handed paramilitary RCMP raid inspired protest and solidarity actions across Canada, the U.S., and further afield. In the following feature, we present reactions and audio from solidarity demonstrations recorded by community radio stations from centres across Canada. Our first contribution comes from Muhammad Imran at Montreal's CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting on traditional Mohawk territory. It features an interview with one of the speakers at the Montreal demo, Marlene Hale.
Judge passed that decision down. It was so hurtful because for them not to let a chief with his own regalia walk into the courthouse, that was hurtful. It was stripped from us and from that chief. It was right from then we knew we had to fight for everything that we stood for. Right from that moment and continue it on.
What about the elected band was in favor of the project? Is there a schism in the community between the elected officials and the hereditary chiefs? If so, how are the people dealing with it?
The people who did stand with APTN and spoke with them said that they were the chiefs. They should have gone directly to the chiefs themselves. They have a building, they have an office, that said this is the hereditary chief's office, saying, this is who we are. Do we have everybody's permission to talk to you? And not to talk to the one or two individuals who claim they were chiefs and they were stripped of their titles and they spoke when they should not have spoken to. And Justin Trudeau has said, I spoke to the chiefs, you didn't even speak to the right ones. I think what everybody is saying up in northern BC, worldwide, everywhere, is that the government is standing behind the money. They need the money and we don't have the money and the power they do. They're talking $40 billion of a project. We can't fight that. That is the sad thing. We don't have the money power has. And it was the power that pushed us right through the Supreme Court when they passed that injunction onto the Unistoten Nation. It is really important for the international communities to hear this and see this and get behind us. Internationally, we've got to get this message out. One person at a time. You know 100 people. You have 50 friends on Facebook. And some of them are abroad, and some of them are in different countries. They can link to somebody else. They took down Gidumtan camp yesterday. Unistoten, as of an hour ago, they have not touched yet. We're not sure when that will happen. We do know that apparently there was a lot of police on snowmobiles. And the snow is like four times what it is here, so we can imagine, I think they're going to come in from maybe from the inside because they have to cross over a bridge to get into Unistoten. And they have cut off all traffic going in there as of yesterday afternoon. And so far there's still communication. Carla can still talk to Frieda Houston. So that means her communication hasn't been cut off. The minute the communication is going to go off, either today or we don't know, they will go into Unistoten.
On January 8th, Chris Cook of radio station CFUV in Victoria on unceded Coast Salish territory went down to the Victoria rally in front of the legislative building, seat of British Columbia's provincial government.
I'm very honored to be standing here today with Tsartlip Chief Don Tom, who's going to give a territorial welcome and acknowledgements.
Thank you, Bali. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chief Don Tom of the Tsartlip First Nation, of the Saanich people. It is my privilege and honor to welcome each of you to the Lekwungen territory of my relatives in Esquimalt territory. I'm sure, as you all may have seen in the media posts and social media, some was on the news, what is happening here in BC is atrocity. It is time that we make it difficult for the RCMP. It is time that we make it difficult for this government. It is time that we begin to occupy the offices of our MLAs, of our MPs, of the RCMP, because it's got to stop now.
We stand with First Nation.
Today we stand as witnesses to this historic moment when the federal and provincial governments could choose to follow the principles of reconciliation and respect the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, the very bare minimal roadmap to just and peaceful coexistence between Canada and First Nations, or to respond by perpetuating and entrenching the ongoing trauma and legacy of colonization in Canada.
Right on!
Yesterday and today, Canada, BC, and the RCMP, with the blessing of the Supreme Court of Canada, ignoring its own previous rulings, affirming Wet'suwet'en rights and title in favor of the business interests of the LNG industry, made the wrong choice.
That's right.
Egregiously violating Wet'suwet'en trespass laws and subjecting Indigenous peoples on their own land to arrest under the Canadian colonial law, criminalized for being Wet'suwet'en. This is a clear continuation of a history of cultural genocide that Indigenous peoples have endured since first contact, and that we are being trained to think of as something that we have put behind us.
Stand with First Nations!
Yeah. And at that, we need a song. And thankfully, we've got the Resistance Rising Choir with us under the powerful voice and lead of Rama De La Rosa.
Thank you. Appalled. When I was a child, I learned some basics, like you don't take what's not yours.
Right.
You don't push people around to get what you want. And our Canadian government is setting a horrible and shameful example for our children. You don't just go pushing people around to get what you want. Shame on Canada. It is up to us to lead the government in the right direction. We need to show unity, to show them that we are for real. We are not going to let them get away with this. Woo! This is not the Canada of 2019. This will not continue into the future.
We can fight the government. We can fight the corrupt oil industries. We must stand together. Our children's futures depend on it. Today, you make me proud to be Canadian.
It gives me a sense of honor to be able to introduce a strong Mam Tagila, matriarch, and salmon warrior, Sas Tikwalis Ambis.
Thanks, Bobby. Yesterday, what happened in the Wet'suwet'en territory was a shameful, shameful act of this government and this illegal use of the force of the RCMP to work and with corporations. The RCMP was first started to deal with the Indian problem, and guess what? They're still doing it.
Shame on the RCMP.
That dispossession of our territories has to cease.
Hear, hear.
From the grounds of the legislature building in Victoria, this is Chris Cook from Groundwater.
Voices you heard in that report included, in order of appearance, MC Bobby Arbus, Chief Dan Tom of Tsartlip First Nation, Rama De La Rosa, Resistance Rising Choir, Greg McElroy, the Canadian Orca Rescue Society, and Sastil Quailas Ambers. On January 10th in Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabeg Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiwak and the Nakota, over 200 people braved the cold at the city's iconic corner of Portage and Main, blocking traffic during the late afternoon rush hour, with a long round dance snaking around traditional drummers at the center.
My name is Woman Floats in a Clear Blue Sky. I'm from Saguing. I'm with the Eagle Clan. As a two-spirited being, I have a second clan. And I hope that the two-spirited people here know that. My grandfather had left a pipe behind that I carry now. I am not recognized in my own territory, but today, with that whistle, I am enacting the office of hereditary chief. I pledge my life to this fight. Woo! Woo! I have been called many titles in my walk on Nimamaaki. On Mother Earth, but there are two that stand out in my heart. The first one in English is Clan Mother for the Eagle Clan. The second title has to do with the hereditary chieftainship. With this feather in the air, I hereby invoke the Ogimaa Khan and the Clan Mother office. I pledge my life to both offices. End this fight for Wet'suwet'en. Let's hear it for them. Wet'suwet'en! I call upon the other hereditary chiefs across Turtle Island, Miganakaki, to come together and take this fight to another level. Quote, in 1997, the Supreme Court of Canada decided that Indigenous title still exists in British Columbia and that when dealing with Crown land, the government must consult with and may have to compensate First Nations whose rights are affected. They never ceded land in that area that's in question. Canada has invaded a sovereign nation state to impose their law.
No, that's it. Play to me. Down, people, let's go!
Thanks again to radio stations CKUT, CFUV, and CKUW for filing the audio for that feature report. One of many similar actions taking place across America and around the world, this month's annual Women's March in Toronto was an opportunity for many to register their opposition to policies adversely impacting their communities. Nama Weingarten from radio station CJRU 1280 AM at Ryerson University in Toronto, on the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and most recently the territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation, attended that march and filed the following report.
Women, make some noise! Woo!
Despite extremely cold weather conditions, women and men from all over the GTA came out to this year's Women's March in Toronto. As the clock struck noon on Saturday, January 19th, hundreds gathered in Nathan Phillips Square as female speakers went up on stage to address different social issues. Rather than primarily focusing on municipal issues around Toronto, this year women refused to cut slack to Doug Ford's provincial government. Ward 13 Toronto Centre Councillor Christine Wong Tam addressed in her speech the need for all politicians to come together at last to put an end to sexism among many other social issues.
We need to work together with all orders of government, including the federal government, to make sure that we do not let anybody in our country fall behind through the cracks. Can we do better? We will not fail another generation. It is up to us, to you and to me, to make sure that this march is not simply a march, but a movement that will march on Toronto.
Even issues such as housing prices and homelessness in Toronto were brought up by the city councillor as she pointed the blaming finger to the provincial government and their lack of funding.
We are not meeting the needs of people who are vulnerable living with addictions and mental health because we do not have adequate funding from the provincial government. That is their responsibility.
Ford's election to the provincial government, along with his new provincial policies like switching back Ontario's sex ed curriculum to the one from 1998, was one of the many things that gave the 2019 Women's March the theme, We Will Not Go Back. Among the speakers that went up on stage was Farah Khan, the manager of Consent Comes First, Office of Sexual Violence Support and Education at Ryerson. Farah is the former co-chair of the Provincial Roundtable on Violence Against Women and a member of the 2018 Gender Equality Advisory Council for the G7 Summit.
We cannot go back. We are not going back to a province that does not support women. Just this past year, I resigned from being the provincial roundtable co-chair of the Violence Against Women Roundtable because I did not believe that this province provincial government was supporting women. In 2018, 49 women and children were killed due to femicide. Shame. And when people talk about the Me Too movement and say, oh, you know, women are finally speaking about sexual violence, that's not true. We've been speaking for a long time. It's just that you are finally listening to us.
Among the crowd were some wearing what is called pussy hats. They are beanies that resemble cat ears in their shape. They became a symbol of solidarity for women's rights and political resistance and were inspired by one of Donald Trump's most popular sayings about women, which doesn't need to be repeated on the air. Along with the hats, many wore red scarves in support of missing and murdered Indigenous women. After the speeches were done, the 1.5-kilometer journey to Queen's Park began as the crowds spilled onto the streets of Toronto to make their voices heard.
My name is Carrie Claire. This is our third time at the Women's March. So we've been coming since 2017, and the things that we were marching for then still matter now. My daughter's sign says my favorite superhero is me. Our friend's sign says little girls with dreams become women with vision. We hold each other up.
My name's Harriet Lawler. I'm 9. I want to be a scientist.
My name's Zoe Watson.
How old are you?
I'm 9. I think that everybody's equal and we should all be treated equally.
I think that just because we're women doesn't make us different and we should be treated equally. Like we should be paid equally when we do the same amount of work at our jobs.
Do you think that by the time you enter the workforce, women will be paid equally?
I don't know.
I hope so.
Many Ryerson students also joined the march, such as sociology student Stephanie Simmons and political science student Rebecca Russell.
I think a march like this speaks volumes because it's something that requires so many people to come together, and it shows that there's a community of people working against something that is trying to take over or like oppress us even further.
I feel like this is the age of like social media activism. So you see like a lot of like online engagement, but it's nice to see like physical bodies standing together to like bring action to something. So I wanted to be a part of that more than the social media aspect for once. I like, so like they were saying that policy decisions can be impacted by things like the Women's March. And so it's nice to see that, you know, it's hard to be ignored when you're right outside of where the people in power are. Like, it's important to come out and show up and show that there's a need for change.
Eventually, the crowd arrived to Queen's Park, where they chanted together in front of Parliament Building. And just like that, the sound of blowing wind was taken over by the beat of drums and chants for justice. The snowflakes seemed suddenly dominated by the crowds roaming the streets. As a warm-hearted community fought against the freezing temperatures, only to hopefully win a much bigger battle. For the Scope News, I'm Nama Weingarten.
We'll be right back after this.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? Me, myself, you or I, who you gonna be tonight? In the dark, are you calling from afar? If we're running side by side, would you leave it all behind? Ooh, everybody's looking for salvation. Ooh.
You just heard Rihanna Ray-Sage with Hide from her recently released album Begin Again. You're still listening to Groundwire, community news broadcasting from coast to coast to coast and available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Now it's time for our community radio report. A brand new podcast by and for campus community radio programmers was launched on November 7th, 2018. Dead Air with a Difference strives to share insider knowledge of the community radio sector, which would not necessarily be of interest to a general audience. New episodes have been posted on alternate Tuesdays ever since. Championing this initiative is Barry Rook, executive director of the NCRA. In a recent interview, Rook provided a little more detail about the podcast.
The first and the third week of the month will be a new episode where we'll talk with usually somebody in the industry. We'll have our industry news. We'll also give a little showcase to something that's happening within the membership. If there's a possibility to do that and highlight some of those projects that are happening so other stations get a chance to hear what's going on. This could include, for example, a walkthrough of a radio station and seeing and hearing how that station operates, or the input of an individual who, say, for example, has a charitable license and what that means to them. Those are all sort of things that we've talked about. And then we also we finish off with our Earshot digital distribution system, which is the Song of the Week, which is a new thing that we've integrated, one of the products and programs that we have for radio stations. But it also gives us access to airing content that's music-based on a podcast, which you can't do anywhere else because you need those rights. Well, that system actually allows you to have those rights and use it right away, which is really quite neat and unique. So we have all those together. We're 6 weeks of 15 in. And on the off weeks, we usually take a section from that week and expand upon it. Hello and welcome to Dead Air with a Difference. We've made it to the industry portion for episode 6 of Dead Air with a Difference. Luke Smith joining us. First news information for 2019. Has the new year sort of hit you yet? Are you still stuck on that 2018 reference?
I'm still trying to catch up on all the reading of everybody who's telling me what's going to happen in 2019. So, you know, at the end of the year, there's all these bajillions of predictions.
We do try to analyze the industry news. So it's not just, did you know, for example, that Facebook and Messenger and WhatsApp and Instagram are talking about integrating into an entire single messaging system as sort of a mega messaging system. Well, what would that mean to a radio station? Does that mean that now the stations should be integrating into that? Should they be having these live chat sessions with the individuals and the listeners, as well as who's listening on the air in other forms? Like, these are sort of the ideas that we would first give the information about and then provide some other thought from the national perspective. It's just another forum that we have that we can share some information and insight and what other stations are doing.
Radio stations interested in contributing their ideas can get in touch by emailing barry@ncra.ca. Find past archives of Dead Air with a Difference by visiting the site ncra.podcast.com. That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Gakin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakota. Headlines this week were written by Gal Mahadevan, Lizzie Chatham, and Catherine Fisher. We also thank Chris Cook, Mohammed Imran, and Nama Weingarten for their contributions. Music this week was from Sebastian Owl and Rihanna Ray Saj. I'm Michael Welch. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca. Thanks for tuning in.